From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American high-tech spying is about to take a great leap forward with the building of a huge National Security Agency data center in the mountain desert outside Salt Lake City. The NSA says it will be a state-of-the-art addition to the nation's defense. My guest today, James Bamford, sees surveillance, secrecy, and difficult questions for a democracy. This hour on Point, inside the matrix of national surveillance. In a moment, we'll talk with NSA chronicler James Bamford. But first, joining me from Salt Lake City, not far from where the big new NSA data center in Bluffdale, Utah, is going up, is Steve Fidel, reporter for the Deseret News and KSL-TV and radio. He's been out at the site from the groundbreaking right on, watching the NSA's huge facility rise from the ground. Steve Fidel, thank you very much for joining us.
Nice to join you, Tom.
What's the scale of this facility?
It's huge and very visible. If you look at floor space, it's about a third the size of the Empire State Building, for example. Only we don't have such a concern about space here, so it's sprawling side to side instead of going up and down.
People describe it as out in the desert, but it's only 30 minutes from Salt Lake City. This is not in the middle of nowhere.
No, describing it as a desert location, I mean, climatologically that's correct, but
right.
Really this is in a suburban setting, highly visible on the foothills of the mountains between south of Salt Lake City.
When was the groundbreaking, and how was the function of this center described then?
A little over a year ago, they broke ground in January last year. The function was described in terms of an essential element for national security in terms of cyber defense, both from a political and military point of view, but also from an economic point of view, as cybersecurity has also become a huge economic issue.
We're talking about 1 million square feet. What have you been told, what's been said about what's going to be in there, Steve?
Lots and lots of computers. Now, we described a huge amount of floor space. You're saying, yeah, it's true, it's about 1 million square feet enclosed, and yet only 100 to 200 people actually working there, maintaining the equipment, engineers mostly.
And those computers doing what? When they came out with their shovels and broke ground before, I suppose there's fences now, but what has the NSA said to the local community?
Very little about the actual work. We know something about the scale there just from the fact that the they're expecting that the power demands to run all those machines is about 65 megawatts. That's about the size of a small city.
Your news organizations are calling it a spy complex. What do you mean by that?
It's a collective term because it's pretty evident that it is going to be eavesdropping on data internationally and drawing on data input from other locations.
A lot of construction jobs locally because of this? Has it been welcomed by the local community, Steve?
It has. It has been promoted locally as a boon in a time of a down economy. Thousands of construction jobs that, of course, will be short-term, but good in that sense, and also having the potential of attracting other high-tech kinds of businesses. Political leaders here promoting it as the kind of thing that would boost the state's image as a technology center.
Is there a technology orbit around this already, or are people expecting one? You know, sometimes auxiliary businesses grow up around centers like this.
It's true. This sits off the side of a major interstate. On the other side of that interstate, Adobe is building a large new campus, much smaller in size, but we'll have a lot more people. And there's also the hope that an untold amount of bandwidth that will accompany the new spy center, as we're calling it, could also attract additional high-tech businesses.
So where does it stand right now? When you drive by, what do you see? Is it just girders, or do you have walls and roofs up already? What's it look like?
Walls and roofs, lots of cranes in place, lots of concrete. We've had some snow lately, which kind of obscures the contrast of that site, but it is becoming very, very visible on the landscape.
And it is big. Steve Fidel with the Deseret News and KSL-TV and radio with us today from Salt Lake City. Steve, thank you very much.
A pleasure. Thanks.
With us now from London is James Bamford, Navy intelligence analyst in the Vietnam War, turned top investigative reporter. His best-selling investigative books, The Puzzle Palace, Body of Secrets, The Shadow Factory, broke open the world of the National Security Agency. His big new feature, out in the current issue of Wired magazine, is Inside the Matrix. The NSA, says the headline, is building the country's biggest spy center. Watch what you say. James Bamford, welcome back to On Point.
Well, thanks. Good to be with you, Tom.
there's been a lot of pushback from the NSA to your reporting. They say, you know, hey, we're just out there building a big facility to protect this country. They sent us a statement this morning that said, you know, a lot of allegations have been made about the planned activities at the Utah Data Center. Quoting them, what it will be, they say, is a state-of-the-art facility designed to support the intelligence community's efforts to further strengthen and protect the nation. What's the problem, James?
Well, that's very specific, isn't it?
No.
That's the problem, is they build these huge things. They lie to the public about what's been going on there in the past. They don't tell us the truth about what they're doing, and they never are accountable, really, to anybody. The Congress during the 70s used to be a sort of a watchdog Congress, a Senate and House Intelligence Committee under Senator Frank Church. In the 30 years since then, all they've done is really become cheerleaders for these agencies, saying that the administration should pay cough up more money for these intelligence agencies. The problem is they're very unaccountable. You had the whole problem of warrantless eavesdropping going on for years, and it would have been decades if the New York Times didn't break the story in 2005. So that's the problem. They sort of anticipate that there'll be a lot of questions, and they'll put out a statement saying it's don't worry, this is very good for us, and no questions, please. That's the problem, I think.
Well, we know you've got a different view, and you're quoting sources here talking about the NSA about to deliver a turnkey totalitarian state in the data processing power and surveillance power of a facility like this. We know that you've got real concerns about secrecy and its relationship with democracy, but take us inside the matrix, as you describe it. What is known? What have you learned about what will be in this facility, the web it will be part of, and what that whole web is doing?
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't really have any problem with the democracy and secrecy. My second book in the trilogy, they had a book signing for me at NSA. So, I understand NSA needs some secrecy, and I understand that. So it's not I don't write three hatchet books on NSA. I write, if they do something good, I'll write nice things about them. If they don't do something good, then I'll write that. But so it's not really blanket. I'm in favor of NSA. I think they do a very good job. The problem is when they get out of control and when they don't tell people what they're doing. I mean, there's a level that they can tell people, and they just don't.
Perspective defined there. Take us into the matrix. What's going on?
Well, what that building is, it's in essence the cloud. It's the term for a big center where there's lots of servers and storage capacity for NSA to hold everything it's been eavesdropping on. That's the problem. It eavesdrops on tremendous amounts of communications all around the world, and it has to have a place to put it. So that's why they're building this huge center in Bluffdale. They're going to store all this data that they're collecting by satellites, by listening posts around the world, big satellite dishes, undersea tapping equipment. They've got to have a place to store it, and that's what Bluffdale is all about. Now, once they put it there, then the agency from its headquarters in Maryland and from listening posts and in major, very large listening posts in Georgia and Texas and Colorado and Hawaii, they'd all be able to link into that center through very secure fiber optic cables. So it's a holding center for all that information that's being collected and allowing all the analysts and code breakers and people at the different listening posts to get in there, analyze the material, and share it.
Well, let's talk about what's being collected. You use a term that I hadn't read before in this piece in Wired magazine, yottabytes, yottabytes, just vast amount, way beyond terabytes. What is being gathered? What is in there or will be in there?
Well, yottabyte is a term of amount of
a septillion
data.
Bytes.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's see here. I have to actually look at it. Yeah. It would actually be translated. If you took a yottabyte worth of data, it would come out to about 500 quintillion pages of text.
Okay.
which is almost, not almost, it is unimaginable. So it's a lot of material, but there was a Defense Department report that actually said that that's what they're looking at now is the data flowing around the world will be about a yottabyte full of data, full of information. And so NSA's got to have a place to put it out, and that's what Bluffdale is. I don't think they'll probably get a yottabyte in there anytime soon, but at some point, if the data keeps filling up, at some point it will reach an enormous amount like that.
The suggestion of your piece is that that information could include email, phone calls, all kinds of private communications and activities of up to and including American citizens. Domestic surveillance, the NSA says no.
Well, that's the NSA's job, is collecting all forms of communications, whether it's telephone calls or email or texts or Twitters or whatever the form of communications. It has some value to NSA. If they're looking at a war situation in Egypt, you want to find out what's being said among the different parties. And so that's one of the key things they're looking at, is all forms of communication.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about federal wiretapping and more of Americans, domestic surveillance maybe, and the vast new cutting-edge data center going up near Salt Lake City in Utah. The National Security Agency says this is for the defense of the country, for cybersecurity. We've got a lot of data. We need a place to store it. My guest, James Bamford, says look closely here. Think about the capacity here. Think about the history of the NSA. And watch what you say is part of the headline of his Wired article, Inside the Matrix. You can find a link at our website. His reporting was right in the middle of a budget meeting this week for the Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee. The NSA director himself, General Keith Alexander, was directly questioned by Georgia Congressman Hank Johnson about the statements made in James Bamford's article in Wired.
Article in Wired magazine reported this month that a whistleblower formerly employed by the NSA has stated NSA signals intercepts include, quote, eavesdropping on domestic phone calls and inspection of domestic emails, end quote. Is that true?
No, not in that context. The question that I think what he's trying to raise is, are we gathering all the information on the United States? No, that is not correct.
And then the Congressman, Johnson, went on to ask a series of direct questions to the head of the NSA, again, General Keith Alexander.
Does the NSA intercept Americans' cell phone conversations?
No.
Google searches?
No.
Text messages?
No.
Amazon.com orders?
No.
Bank records?
No.
What judicial consent is required for NSA to intercept communications and information involving American citizens?
Within the United States, that would be the FBI lead.
James Bamford joins us from London. His big Wired piece that you heard the general talking about there is Inside the Matrix, the NSA building the country's biggest spy center. Watch what you say. James Bamford, there's the head of the NSA saying, hey, no, 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 we don't intercept Americans' Google searches, text messages, banker, and so on. What's the problem?
Well, I hope he's right, because they were doing exactly that for years after the Bush administration came in and instituted its warrantless eavesdropping operations. One of the people I quote from in the article was a person who basically designed the system. He designed the worldwide eavesdropping system. He was the technical director technical director of the organization within NSA that did all the eavesdropping around the world. So he knew how it worked, and he knows what goes into that system. And he described it very thoroughly in the article. Using his name, he wasn't.
This is William Binney, the former technical director for the agency's M Group.
William Binney, and he was a very senior NSA official. He left the NSA after nearly 40 years because he didn't want to be involved in the warrantless eavesdropping operations, and he risked going to jail by saying these things in the article. One of the interesting things is all these years there have been people that have watched the NSA and watch the secrecy of the intelligence community. And there have been so many people that have wanted General Alexander to speak about what NSA is doing, and he has never spoken before. So if nothing else, the article has at least gotten him to say a few words about what the NSA is doing for the very first time. The problem is that the NSA has enormous capacities to eavesdrop. When it was doing the warrantless eavesdropping, that's what it was doing, eavesdropping on American citizens without a warrant. The U.S. government admitted that. So we're not talking about the fact that this has never happened. The NSA has been doing that ever since 2001. And the question is, now that we're 10 years after 9/11, where do we stand? How much of that is still being done? And those are the questions that I think really need to be raised. And I'm glad that a congressman yesterday was one of the very first ever to actually raise those questions with General Alexander. So I'm really glad that there's a beginning of a dialogue. What I would like to see, actually, is I quote from numerous whistleblowers here. One of them was Bill Benny, who designed the eavesdropping system, automated it around the world. And another was one of the intercept operators down in Georgia, where they do a lot of the eavesdropping. And she said that they were taking calls in from journalists calling overseas, calling their families here in the United States. And she was ordered to eavesdrop on them and transcribe them. And she said these were very intimate calls with between spouses in the middle of the night. And and then I quote from another source in the that was down there also saying virtually the same thing.
So when Benny, if I may
David
ask,
Murphy Falk, I'm sorry.
If I may ask, then lay out some of what you're reporting here for us. I mean, when Bill Benny, and again, he was technical director for this giant 6,000-person organization responsible for eavesdropping on most of the world, when he says that with this facility and the sort of web of capacity around it, the NSA is about to deliver a turnkey totalitarian state, what does he mean? Give us the pieces of this.
Well, what that means is a turnkey system is where the system is in place and all you need is a key to turn it on. So what he's saying is that the infrastructure is there, that's what they've been building for the last 10 years. That's pretty much what the article is about. The article is not just on warrantless eavesdropping or the domestic eavesdropping. It's about this whole system that's been put into place for the last 10 years, since 9/11. It's a 10-year project, and Bluffdale is the final piece in that, which will be effective. I think we'll go into operation around September of 2013. Mm-hmm. So what it is, it's this enormous infrastructure that was designed and put into place and almost completed to eavesdrop on enormous amounts of communications around the world. And Senator Frank Church, it was 1975, so it was 35 years or more ago. He was chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And this is a time way before the internet or tweets and every other kind of communication. And he said at that time, being one of the first people in Congress ever to take a look at NSA, that if ever that technology was turned on the American public, there'd be no place to hide. This was the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee back in 1975. And now we have Bill Benny, who pretty much designed the modern system. The system, he only left at the end of 2001. And he said that, you know, the way it is right now, it's pretty much a turnkey, or it could be turned into a turnkey totalitarian state. Those were his words after 40 years at NSA.
Could be is a pretty important phrase there. Is he saying, are you saying that this kind of surveillance is happening now, or simply that, uh-oh, look there, there's the capacity, watch out, it could be turned on?
Well, exactly. The problem is none of us know, because nobody ever talks from NSA. That's why I did the article. That's why I write the books, is to generate some interest into asking questions about NSA. I mean, if I had a golden key to NSA, I'd be able to go in there and ask all these questions. All I can do is raise the questions and see if we can get some answers. Yesterday, we got a few answers. What Bill Binney is saying is that the system is there. I mean, you could turn it on or you could turn it off, or you could turn just the outside world on and leave the U.S. off, or you could turn the outside world on and the U.S. on. The system is there. The infrastructure is there. It doesn't stop at the border. This is, you know, this is communications. It's borderless communications. You put a satellite up there, it can collect information anywhere. It doesn't stop because of a border. So the question is, what are they doing and what are they doing with it? And those are questions that I think should be answered. Nobody has really come out, except for yesterday, a couple fairly garbled answers that were very parsed and very qualified that came from General Alexander. But nobody's really discussed this. And if I was living in Utah, I'd want to know what they're building in my backyard. You don't have to know every what's the code word for this, or what is the how do you break this code? You just have to know generally, what are we doing? What is this democracy doing with our communications?
James Bamford, listen with us then to maybe one of the examples that you're talking about. This was, again, Tuesday in the hearing of the Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee of the Armed Services Committee in the House. And the NSA director, General Keith Alexander, was there. And here again, he was questioned. The scenario was put to him by Georgia Representative Hank Johnson about the capabilities of the NSA for domestic surveillance. And he responds here in terms of limits to that capacity. Here's a kind of odd, or anyway, you'll hear the scenario and the Alexander's response.
If Dick Cheney were elected president and wanted to detain and incessantly waterboard every American who sent an email making fun of his well-known hunting mishaps, what I'd like to know is, does the NSA have the technological capacity to identify those Cheney bashers based upon the content of their emails? Yes or no?
No. Can I explain it?
Yes.
The question is, where are the emails and where is NSA's coverage? I assume by your question that those emails are in the United States.
Correct.
NSA does not have the ability to do that in the United States.
All right. James Bamford, dissect this for us. If the NSA with a yottabyte of data can't find people making fun of Dick Cheney's hunting mishaps, that doesn't sound so potent. What do you hear in that exchange?
Well, that was one of the strangest scenarios I've ever heard. You know, trying to find people who are laughing at a president, Dick Cheney, who you know, shoots people in the face with his shotgun. So I don't really know what to make of that question or the answer.
Well, but
really,
the congressman is saying, can you get into emails? Could you survey lots of emails and find every American who was making fun of, in this case, hypothetically, a sitting president because of something in his past? And I kind of understand that as a way of getting at capacity here. And the general said no. I mean, do you believe his response?
Well, I don't know. You know, the NSA has lied so many times. In the 1970s, they had this operation called Operation Shamrock, which was copying all the telegrams going through the United States. And they lied to Congress about that. They were eavesdropping on anti-war protesters, telephone calls on anti-war protesters. They lied about that. It was only discovered later during the Church Committee investigations. When NSA was doing the warrantless eavesdropping a few years ago, President Bush was asked, does the United States ever eavesdrop on anybody without a warrant? And his answer was no. At the same time, they were conducting warrantless eavesdropping. So, you know, I take it with a grain of salt. I interviewed the person who put that system into place. You don't really get much higher than the technical director for the organization that does all the eavesdropping. And then he went to another job where he automated that whole system around the world. So that's why I think that you really need a congressional hearing, an open congressional hearing for the first time. You don't have to ask every question about what the NSA's capability is, but you should get a general capability. Obviously, since General Alexander was able to say what he said yesterday in open session for the very first time, that should be indication that there should be a wider discussion of this, not with these sort of silly hypotheticals about finding people who are laughing at Dick Cheney, but real questions. So and real, you know, what I would suggest it actually in this piece I put up, or the Wired put up yesterday on their blog, is have a panel, put these whistleblowers on one panel, swear them in, ask them questions under oath. I mean, they say these things in press, and they're willing to risk going to jail to raise these issues. Put them on a panel, let them say what they have to say, and then have another panel where you have NSA responding to these people. You know, this is a democracy. We should be having some open discussions about this. I mean, we have discussions about nuclear weapons without discussing exactly how the nuclear weapons are made, but we discuss how many nuclear weapons we should have, where they should be, what kind of uses we should have. But we don't do that for NSA and all this eavesdropping. It's just, you know, no such agency. NSA has always had the joke that it stands for no such agency or never say anything.
And that's what
we've
seen
historically. I think those days should be over, especially after what the NSA did just in this past decade in terms of hiding all this warrantless eavesdropping, not only from Congress, but also from the court that was set up to oversee the NSA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court.
James,
they were cut out of the picture.
Right. Stand by, if you would, in London. I want to begin to bring our listeners in. Tara in Acton, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Tara. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that the biggest issue is the word intercept.
Okay.
There are very clever definitions that are actually redefined by folks that work in NSA. I was an InfoSec consultant at one time. And if you go and buy, for example, information about people from Google, perhaps, is that intercept or is that purchase of commercial information? The CAN-SPAM law, President Bush called it the anti-spam law, but it effectively legalized the gathering of all kinds of information. So there's two issues. There's the word intercept, first of all, and then there's the issue of correlation. So when you get the information, and then you correlate it. And then the next step is what you do with it. So these steps can be, you can construct oversight, citizen oversight, fairly easily without disclosing, you know, national defense secrets.
But do we have anything like that oversight today, Tara?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, that's what privacy activists do. We burrow into these issues. It's just that, you know, it's one of the issues that Occupy has brought up is transparency and accountability. So once you have the information, what do you do with it? And what types of information can you correlate? And what factors are used? These are all things that citizen oversight can easily do if NSA wanted to. But we also have to require them. There are public employees, and we have to decide what to do. And it's not just them, by the way. It's, when you have Google and all these other people, and you sign a petition, when you buy something in a store, all that information gets correlated.
James Bamford joins us from London, and we've got questions for you, James, from our listeners. Jeff in North Providence, Rhode Island. Thanks for calling, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. My question for James is, how complicit are the telecommunications carriers in the monitoring, not only management and the CEOs, but what do certain employees of the telecommunication companies know about how switchers or routers are configured to make this all possible?
James?
Well, thanks for the question. Yeah, it's a very interesting question because the telecoms are complicit. They have to be complicit because they're the means by which the communications are passed. The perfect example was this secret room that was discovered a few years ago at the AT&T's Big Switch, which is about a 10-story building in San Francisco. It's where a lot of the communications from overseas and a lot of the domestic communications come together and then they get transmitted to other parts of the country. One of the AT&T employees discovered a secret room in there where nobody had a key. It was a cipher lock, and nobody had the key to it. And he eventually discovered that that was installed by NSA and that that was all NSA intercept equipment in there. What basically happens, and Bill Benny, the person who designed a lot of the system, said that there's between 10 and 20 of these secret rooms and telecoms around the United States on the West Coast and the middle part of the country and on the East Coast. There's very few employees that actually know what's going on, hardly anybody. The NSA would come in and they say, you know, we have to build this secret room nobody will have access to it. Nobody can ask questions and nobody's cleared for it. The people themselves really don't work at the companies, except for maybe the general counsel and the president or something, maybe briefed on it. But the average employee doesn't know. And because a lot of this was illegal, that they're not, you know, AT&T and Verizon and so forth, they're not supposed to give out your communications without your consent or without a warrant. There was a lot of lawsuits and a lot of people that wanted to bring criminal charges against the telecom companies a few years ago during all these warrantless eavesdropping. And so Congress, to protect the companies, granted them immunity from both criminal prosecution and also from lawsuits. So they can be working secretly for the government, doing all this kind of thing, and doing the intercepts and passing the information on, knowing that they're not going to be suffering any consequences for it.
You know, we've got a question. Thank you, Jeff, for yours. Wes writes online that he doesn't think there's an issue with this type of facility, let's say the Utah facility. He writes, if we continue to have reasonable due process in this country, I really don't think the average citizen has anything to worry about. There's the legal issue of how these things do or might get cleared off or don't get cleared legally. Then there's the capacity issue. And we've got listeners, Steve on Twitter, writing about what he was hearing in General Alexander responding that the NSA was restricted in the United States about what they could do. I wanted to listen a little bit more from that testimony this week. And again, this is the head of the NSA, General Keith Alexander, before the Emerging Threats and Capabilities Subcommittee. This is Tuesday. And again, after this scenario about Dick Cheney and tracking down, this is just a hypothetical scenario about tracking down Americans who had made fun of his hunting accident, Congressman Johnson went on to ask what the process would be and about the capacity of the NSA to pursue that kind of information.
In the United States, we would have to go through an FBI process, a warrant, to get that and serve it to somebody to actually get it.
I see, but you do have the capability of doing it.
But not in the United States.
Not without a warrant.
No. We don't have the technical insights in the United States. In other words, you have to have something to intercept or some way of doing that, either by going to a service provider with a warrant or you have to be collecting in that area. We're not authorized to collect, nor do we have the equipment in the United States to actually collect that kind of information.
James Bamford, take that last statement. We're not authorized to do that, that domestic surveillance, nor do we have the equipment in the United States to collect that kind of information. What do you say?
Well, it's very curious. How were they doing all this warrantless surveillance in the United States for all these years? And Bill Benny, as I mentioned, interviewed him, and he said they installed that in the United States. And the people at the telecom companies were given immunity from prosecution for passing all this domestic communications to NSA. So one problem here is that NSA has its own definition of terms, as this caller, the first caller, brought up. NSA has this manual. It's called the USID 18 manual. It pretty much, it's very, very secret. It's over top secret. And it tells, it's basically the rule book for NSA. And in that, it gives definitions of terms. So the NSA's definition of the word intercept is much different from the definition of that word that the average person would use. The NSA, for example, defines intercept as, a piece of information is not intercepted unless the communications are processed into an intelligible form intended for human inspection. I mean, you won't find that in Webster's Dictionary. So what they're saying is that if they could pull all the information in, and they could intercept it, pull it in, and put it into a big storage facility like Bluffdale. But it's not technically intercepted until somebody puts on the earphones and starts listening to it. So you have to parse these answers out. You have to understand what the secret definition of words are. And again, this is not the way democracy should work, so that somebody writes a magazine article or a book, and then a congressman asks a question which doesn't really fit any realistic scenario, and then you have a director of the NSA who makes some sort of unelaborated, very parsed, unsyntaxed, and not very clear answers. That's really not the way this should work. There should be a panel in front of the Congress asking legitimate questions and having other people there who have legitimate answers, like the whistleblowers that again, are risking their life.
They're putting their lives in danger by talking
well,
to you.
Well, yeah, exactly. They're putting their one example here is Tom Drake. A few years ago, he was arrested for leaking some information to the Baltimore Sun. And the NSA charged him with, I think it was 10 felony counts of espionage. And the defense team, the public defenders, hired me last year to look at that material and to see if I could determine whether that material is really classified or not. He was facing 35 years in prison. And a week before, what I was able to do was to show that all the information, every single piece of information that the government was charging him with, was not classified. It wasn't classified at all. The government itself had released these kinds of information to the public over the years. So in the last minute, the government dropped the charge from 35 years in prison, 10 felony counts of espionage, down to one misdemeanor of abusing his computer, which was no jail time and no fine. It was less than a parking ticket. This is the honesty that you get from the National Security Agency. They're saying all this is top secret. We can't talk about it. This guy should go to jail for the rest of his life. And it turns out none of that was true. The judge in that case, Judge Bennett in Baltimore, who was a Bush appointee, complimented the defendant, Tom Drake, and just completely chewed out the prosecutor for that. So you really have to not take or take with a grain of salt some of these things that the that comes out of NSA.
That's a pretty eye-popping retreat from 10 felony counts to one misdemeanor. Frederick in Charlottesville, Virginia. Frederick, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm 86. I was in World War II, Omaha Beach, and about 1960, I began to work extensively with the intelligence community.
Okay.
I have a strong opinion that the American public cannot be told everything or even a lot, very much about what we know about our adversaries. And the principal reason is if we know what we can do, that is, if the NSA were forced to testify on what we can do,
yep,
we would also be letting our enemies, and they become extremely confident around the world,
mm-hmm,
we would let them know what we cannot do, so they could stop using the ways that we can do, finding what they're doing, and try to find ways that we cannot do.
Frederick, I understand that. You've got a lot of life experience. You've got war experience. You say you worked in top secret work in the government, and you don't want to give away what we know about our adversaries. But what about information that ends up being collected about Americans, American citizens, and not necessarily adversaries at all? What about that front?
I understand your question. I'm trying to find the words for it. We cannot tell what the top classified agencies like NSA are doing.
But can we lay down firm laws, lines, expectations publicly discussed about what they should and should not be able to do when it comes to American citizens? I mean, we do have the Constitution.
We do, and we have laws. We have extensive laws that prevent them from doing that. But the fact, I think, is always going to be we cannot prevent individuals from inside the agency from doing things that are not legal.
Frederick, I appreciate your call. I mean, James, you hear that, and it comes up again and again. Come on, we need defense. There are threats. We want good intelligence. We need global elements of surveillance. And so if we want those things to be effective, we're going to have to, in some ways, turn a blind eye or, you know, tolerate a blind eye.
I don't agree at all. I mean, we talk about nuclear weapons without, giving away the critical information of how they're built and so forth. You can have discussions about NSA. This whole myth that NSA lives in this little world that nobody can talk about is fantasy. It doesn't exist anymore. Not only that, the NSA doesn't. This myth that NSA does all these this amazing work with all this intercepted information is just a fantasy. They missed the first World Trade Center bombing. They missed the attack on the USS Cole. They missed the attacks on the East African embassy. They missed 9/11. They missed this underwear bomber that flew over to Detroit on Christmas Day. They missed the bomber in Times Square. If this agency had a really good track record, I could say, wow, you know, maybe we should just let them do what they're doing. But they don't have a very good track record, and they're spending trillions of dollars, basically, and there's no accountability. I don't think that in the 21st century, with the way communications are being transmitted, that's really acceptable. The gentleman was speaking about 1960. In 1960, the only way people could communicate, there were only two ways, basically. One was a hardline telephone in your house, and the other way was by mail. And we had very strict rules about access to the mail. Today, you have communications going out in so many different ways, and by eavesdropping on that communication, just your web searches, you know, which pages you're looking at, what websites you're going to, you can basically read a person's mind by doing all that. So we have to have far greater a far greater attitude of looking at what this government is doing, what the agency is doing with our communications.
Presidents have told us to be confident about that, even when it would be later exposed that we shouldn't have been. Here was President Bush. This is April 2004, a question and answer event in Buffalo, New York. Then President George W. Bush affirming and saying that anything like warrantless wiretapping would be against the law, would not happen in the United States.
Anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland because we value the Constitution.
The next year, the New York Times would expose that the U.S. government had been conducting warrantless wiretapping. What's the bottom line concern that you're bringing to us here, James Bamford? What's at risk if this is not handled correctly?
What is risk? The risk is, Orwell in 1984. The problem is having the government get access to all this information when we're a democracy with the Fourth Amendment protections and so forth. And we have to watch the government, or as I say in my piece here, we should be having people listen to the listeners, find out that what they're doing right, fine, but we should have people that look over their shoulder and be able to tell us these things so we don't have presidents lie to us like George Bush just did then, or numerous officials of the NSA over the years lying about eavesdropping on U.S. citizens during the Nixon period and other periods. So that's really the bottom line, is accountability, which there has never been for NSA.
and capacity grows. We're talking yottabytes, a new phrase of the day in terms of information flow. And the building goes up outside Salt Lake City in Utah. James Bamford saying to the country, pay attention here, pay attention. In his article in the Wired magazine, Inside the Matrix, the NSA is building the country's biggest spy center. Watch what you say. James Bamford in London, thank you very much for being with us today.
Appreciate it, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Thanks for your thoughts. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.